Hi folks, welcome to episode 2 of the Epochs of the Lotus Eaters, where we just go through history and find things that we think are going to be interesting and talk about them for a bit. But this is a follow-up to basically the first podcast, which was on Hanno the Navigator, who was the Carthaginian explorer who went and circumnavigated the west of Africa and arrived somewhere around the Congo. And we thought that we'd talk about his sort of Greek counterpart, Pythias, who instead of going around Africa, went up around Europe and discovered, well, not discovered, but explored Britain and the islands off the northwest of Europe and left us a very fascinating account. I'm, of course, joined by Beau. And I guess the question is, where does Pythias begin?
Well, that's a good question. I suppose one of the first things to mention about Pythias's journey and his account of it is that it's lost. Yeah. We don't have it anymore. We only even know it exists. We only know of Pythias at all, but secondhand through other ancient historians who mentioned it. Mm-hmm. So Pythias's journey up to on the Atlantic coast, up to Britain, and possibly as far as Scandinavia and Iceland, but almost certainly to the Orkneys, yeah, circumnavigated Britain. We'll go into all the details of it. That he wrote a book upon his return, published a book apparently called On the Ocean. And that is lost. However, some of the historians, ancient historians that do survive, mention it and reference it or even quote it directly occasionally. Mm-hmm. Mainly Diodorus of Sicily, Strabo the geographer, mm-hmm, and Pliny the Elder, and a couple of other people here and there. We've got scraps and fragments. Yeah. But one thing I would say was that with ancient history, and the further back you go, the more this is the case, that we're dealing with second or third hand accounts that are themselves fragmentary. So Pythias's journey is like Hanno's in the sense that you get to sort of play around with, yeah, fragments, and you're forced to use your imagination quite a lot, which to some people is frustrating, and to others it's magic.
It's part of the fun of it.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
Yeah, I agree. So Pythias, set sailing around 320 BC, somewhere around that?
Yeah, it's around that. He's pretty much contemporaneous with Alexander the Great. So yeah, we're talking, yeah, around the 320s, 330s BC.
Yeah, so we're talking about 200 plus years after Hanno. This is like Columbus, was it 1450 something, 56, something like that, when Columbus discovers America, and then no one going out that way.
Is it 1492? Columbus sailed the ocean blue.
Yeah. Sorry, yeah, 1492, yeah. This isn't a podcast about Columbus, thank you. End of the 15th century, beginning of the 16th century, and then no one going back there until the 18th century. So it's quite a huge amount of time that they're distant from, aren't they?
Oh, definitely. And it puts in perspective Hanno the Navigator a bit, I think, that is really spectacularly early, yeah, because by the 3rd century BC, there's all sorts going on. John, if you want to put up that first picture, we can see here a map of what historians like to call Magna Graecia, the Greater Greece.
I mean, this is a map from the time of Hanno, incidentally, isn't it?
Yes.
So this is what the Mediterranean looked like as Hanno was on his journey. But if we go forward in time 300 years, I mean, Assyria is no longer Assyria, it's Persia, and it controls all of Anatolia and things like this, and Egypt as well, incidentally. And Alexander is currently marching his way into it on his conquest of the Persian Empire. So this is a period of time in which the Greeks are very much ascendant culturally, aren't they? And physically, materially. They seem to be sort of blooming out of Greece and conquering the world.
Yeah, the Romans, a lot of people might know that they thought of the Mediterranean as their sea.
Yeah, about 300 years' time.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, now it's the Greeks really that consider it their sea.
Yeah, because the Greeks not only have like a high civilization, which is something the Carthaginians have and the Persians have, which isn't really something you describe to the Romans actually in this time period, although you could say the same about the Etruscans, but the Greeks are also the premier military power, aren't they? The premier power. The Carthaginians control the seaways with their great navy, but the Greeks are the land warriors, the phalanxes. That's they're the ones out conquering everything.
Yeah, that's right. In this period, the sort of unparalleled, the phalanx, yeah, is just all dominant. And historians have argued or discussed why that was. Why was it around this time or in this sort of 200, 300 year window? Why then? Why not before? that the Greeks seem to just sort of explode around the Mediterranean basin there. The stories of them settling in southern Italy and Sicily are very well documented. But perhaps the further west you go, slightly less so. I mean, so you can see up there Massilia, which is modern day Marseille.
Yeah.
And that's where Pythias came from.
Yeah, and that was a Greek settled city, wasn't it?
Exactly, yeah. Marseille has got a very, very long history. Mm. and it has... I've not actually ever been there. Have you ever been there?
I haven't.
I haven't, but I understand it's got a great harbour, even to this day, a great sort of deep harbour.
Yeah.
And so it sort of lent itself... I suppose if you were exploring or you was a pioneer going around the Mediterranean, it would just be sort of an obvious place to try and settle. It's like, well, this is great. This is a great spot. And it's right at the mouth of the Rhone.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted to, you could go up into the interior.
Yeah.
That was one thing I might actually say just real quick about that, is that...
Sure.
Whether this is entirely accurate or whether this is what I'm about to say is the result of historians trying to simplify things, I don't know. But this idea that the Greeks would, as I say, explore the Mediterranean basin and make colonies all around. And it was as though, this map sort of suggests that, as though they just keep to the coast, though.
Yeah.
And to their backs are sort of mountains that are inhabited by unknown barbarians.
Yeah.
And again, I think it gives it a bit of romance, the way they're like this small pocket of civilization in a land ocean of barbarians. And you've just got these little pockets. And anyway, Marseille, Massalia, is one of those. And that's where Pythias was from. And you can imagine as well that they must have a tradition of seafaring.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not completely crazy or out of left field with no explanation why he might have done something like his Atlantic journey.
Well, you can see exactly why they would have settled there.
Right.
I mean, just for practical reasons, you're on the Rhone, you've got an amazing seaport, and colonists from Greece sail across, they settle there to get hold of whatever Gallic products there are, presumably grain and wine.
Wine was the big one at that time for Marseille, yeah.
There we go. And they obviously shipped this back to Greece.
Mm. Yeah.
Part of a trade network.
And the archaeologists can tell by the amount of amphora, these big...
Huge clay jugs, basically.
Yeah. And that's one of those things that, as a historian, you have the literary evidence, if you're lucky enough to have any, and then you've got the archaeology, the hard evidence on the ground. And one of the things they always like to talk about is, well, coins is a big one, but yeah, the amphora. So you can say how much commerce, or you can sort of suggest how much commerce is going on and where.
And it's doubtless tons of it.
Yeah, yeah, loads. Yeah, it seems that Marseille was, even then, like some sort of delta hub of commerce.
Yeah.
And so Pythias sets off in a few generations before this. It's said that the Carthaginians always held the Straits of Gibraltar there, the Pillars of Hercules. And for a few generations, quite a few generations, it was closed off to anyone that wasn't a Carthaginian. Mm. And so some sort of trade wars... It's an anachronism to call it that, but it seems by the age of Pythias that was sort of over.
I don't see why that would be an anachronism, because Massalia, like, it fulfills the same kind of function that Carthage does.
Right, yeah. I mean, they could easily have been a sort of a direct competitor. They never really were, but you could imagine that's not outside the realm's possibility at all. Quite right. But so by the age of Pythias, you were sort of allowed to sail out of the Mediterranean if you wanted to.
Yeah.
But of course, most people wouldn't, because it's sort of, why would you, it's sort of a crazy risk. It's like,
where are you going?
It is a bit like Columbus just sailing into the unknown.
Yeah.
It's
like Hanno going around the west coast of Africa. What are you going to find there? Savages. That's all you're going to find north of Europe at this point. You know, you're not going to find civilization. The civilization exists in the basin of the Mediterranean, and everyone knows that, you know, to the north is just savage barbarian tribes.
Who don't even speak Greek?
Yeah. They don't write. They don't speak Greek. They don't live in cities. They don't do anything apart from fight each other.
That was one of their definitions. If you don't speak Greek, you are barbaric. It's pretty cut and dry.
And the word barbarian comes from barbaroi, which was just them mimicking the foreign speech. Ba, 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 ba.
Like, they thought they sounded like the barring of an animal of some type.
Which is really ironic, considering when you hear Greek.
Right. Yeah.
Just teasing.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.